listening to The Bob Dean Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, hello there, and welcome back to, well, I hope I'm welcoming you back to episode 3 of The Bob Dean Show.
Yay.
From my palatial, almost Beverly Hills estate. I want to thank our first episode, Jennifer Diamond, Michael Hooper, last week. And then today we're going to welcome my friend and fellow comic and humanitarian, Anna Varningreer. She's going to be joining us in just a few minutes. I'm having a really good time getting back on with the show. I want to thank Sam at LA Talk Radio. He is putting up with all my questions and comments about getting back into the groove of this. Also, I want to, before I forget, please follow me on Instagram, BobDean2971, The Bob Dean Show on Facebook, and my regular old page, Bob Dean. Do whatever you want. Just keep in touch. Please remember to always tune in on Thursday at 11 to LA Talk Radio. And please like us on iHeartRadio, Stitcher, and iTunes. I'm working on some setups with those things right now. So please remember to like and tell your friends to listen, because that's what I do. I think today I'm going to start off with a joke you can't tell anymore. For those of you that know, I've been a bartender for over 40 years, and I repeat that like every week, but I will continue to do it. And I was discussing with a friend, a younger bartender, and also some people in my class that I like to, the open mic nights where, oh, by the way, thank you to Cinder Krenquist at the LA School of Comedy. Just thank you. She does open mics Monday, Wednesday, and Friday on the corner of Santa Monica and Westwood. So we were discussing jokes you can't tell anymore. What is acceptable in this and that and the other thing? And I don't know. I'm just going to go back. So here's a joke. Now, these are jokes that I didn't write and you can't tell anymore. They're bar jokes. So this guy buys a coal mine and he hires a black guy, a white guy, and a Chinese guy to work in it for him. He says, lines them all up. The first day, he tells the white guy, the black guy, you're in charge of ground level to sub-level transportation. He tells the white guy, you're in charge of picking and shoveling. And he tells the Chinese guy that you're in charge of the supplies. So go to work. They all go to work down in the mine. About 8 hours later, the mine owner comes back and the first guy he comes across is the black guy. And he says, well, what are you doing? And the black guy says, well, I'm doing what you instructed me to do. I'm in charge of ground level to sub-level transportation. The mine owner goes, you're doing a great job. Thank you very much. What about the Chinese guy and the white guy? He goes, the black guy goes, I don't know. I haven't seen him since this morning. So the miner goes down in the mine. The next guy he comes across is a white guy. And he says, well, what are you doing? And the white guy says, well, I'm doing what you told me to do. I'm in charge of picking and shoveling. The miner says, great job. Thank you so much. What about the Asian guy? And he goes, well, I don't know. You put him in charge of supplies this morning and I haven't seen him since. So the miner says to himself, oh, dang it. This guy is lost down in the mine. So he gets a big old spotlight and he's going further and further down in the mine, further and further down in the mine. And he comes around the corner and the Chinese guy jumps out and goes, supplies. Come on. That's a good joke. At any rate, bar jokes can't tell anymore. I'll be featuring one at the beginning of every show from now on. Let's see what else. I think I'm going to give you a little bit of background on my friend Anna Varningreer. Anna and I met several years ago at the LA School of Comedy. She is a very, very funny woman. Her stage name is The Colored Lady. She has her own unique style, and she also worked with Disney for a very long time. She has a lovely family we're going to talk about. She's just an all-around cool cat. And some other things that she's doing with a volunteer class of storytelling. Well, we're going to talk about that now. Joining us is my friend Anna Varningreer, the Colored Lady. What's up, Colored Lady?
Hey, baby. I'm just being my little colored self here in beautiful downtown Burbank. How about you?
You look marvelous. Everything's cool. You look marvelous. I love your scarf.
This is my Bob Mackie scarf.
It is absolutely stunning.
It's gorgeous, and it's the, you know, I'm trying to amp up my look a little bit here. So I don't want to embarrass you. I don't want you to say, man, what was she wearing?
Are you kidding? We would never embarrass each other. All we do when we get together is trouble.
That's true.
We had a great time.
Did you ever pay for that ticket? Did you ever pay that fine we got?
Which one? You know, Anna, please tell us that story. In your act, you talk about parking.
Oh my God.
Because it's so true.
It's okay. Here's the deal. I live in Burbank. Okay. We have alternate side of the street parking for residential areas. We have street parking free parking downtown. And you drive to Burbank, if it's, you know, if it's the middle of the day and you're in a residential area, it'll have one sign that says, you know, no parking on Tuesdays this time, or no parking on Wednesdays this time. So I don't go more than 10 miles away from where I live usually. And so I had to go to the west side. And so I pulled out my Waze and I get the little thing, because the lady says, you know, turn left and in 3/4 of a mile, turn this way, and 500 feet, turn that way. I've learned what 500 feet and 1,000 feet look like. So I get to West Hollywood and I turn down the street and I don't see the house that I know that I've been to. So I pull over, and okay, here's the deal about West Hollywood. Every street has at least 5 or 6 signs that tell me what I can or cannot do.
But let everybody know, you're right, but they're all pasted together on one pole.
And they're all in one long line.
It's like a billboard.
Each post has 5 signs on it. And I found out something a little later. Anyway, so I pull over and I'm reading the sign, and you know, because I don't want to get a ticket. You know, like $50 may not be much to people, but it's a lot when you're retired.
It's 60 in LA.
Yeah, well, okay, 60. Even worse. That's like a tip on top of the actual fine. So I read the sign, and I didn't even turn my car off. So, you know, like, it's like, you know, no parking. Okay, let's see. It's not the 4th Tuesday. Mercury's not in retrograde.
No campers.
There's no campers. And I work my way down through all the signs. I said, okay, all of this doesn't pertain to me. So I pull over, and I pull over not in front of a driveway. I pull over past the driveway. I leave my car running so that, in case, you know, and I've got my hazard lights on in case somebody comes along and says, well, you can't park there. So I pull out the thing and I'm looking for it. And it's like, oh, I turned down the wrong street. I should have gone over 2 more streets and I turned down the wrong street. I look to my left so I can pull out. There's a parking ticket on my window. Dude, they have like parking ninjas over there. Those people do not play around.
Meter maids eat their young.
Oh my God. So I pull up, you know, so I, and I'm, you know, and it really ticks me off, and I don't get upset very often, but it really ticked me off. And so I look on the ticket and it says failure to read the second group of signs. So I pull forward a little bit and that's what it says. Part 2 of things you can't do on this street. Well, I was pissed. So I was like, yeah, damn, really? So I go to court. And, you know, I'm this little old fat lady, and I have my cane and I come in and I was like, you know, I said, Your Honor, and I'm trying to be helpful. You know, dude, you know me. I try to be helpful.
Understood. You certainly
So I say to the judge, you know, I said, there are a lot of signs over there, and this is a pretty wealthy area. Why don't you guys get one of those scrolling signs? and it just scrolls. And then you know when you're through reading. He charged me with contempt of court and being a smart ass.
Did he really?
So now I have to go, and gave me 200 hours of community service. So I said, fine. And just so you know, this counts as part of my community service, because I'm talking about this. Anytime, if you see more than 3 signs on a post and you can't figure it out, don't park there.
Don't park there.
Don't park there. You just don't park there. Don't do it. Don't do it. There's a reason it's confusing, and it will cost you at least $60. That's $50 plus a tip for the meter maid and your time to go down to court.
Not even to mention your self-humility. You know, that like for those that don't know, you know, West Hollywood, of where all the action is, blah, blah, blah. You know, you're exactly right. Each part, and they're everywhere. It's like reading a damn, just for over and over and over of signs. And I thought of you. I was sitting out in front of the Rainbow Room, this is about a year and a half ago, with Cindy Bell in the car and another friend, Mark DiPolito. And we had the top down on the convertible, and it was probably 9:30. And we're just sitting there, and Cindy's like, "What are you doing?" And I go, "I'm trying to decipher the sign, because my friend Anna says, if you can't figure it out, just don't park there.
Don't park there. Don't even do." Because, and I know we can do better. You know, the city can do better.
Well, the city just needs the revenue so much. Because, like, I'm in West L.A., I milk Santa Monica for the address, but we're right where Brentwood and Santa Monica come together.
Yeah.
And that's the only reason why anybody comes to my parties is because there's street parking at, you know, on Stoner Avenue, which I love to say where I live on Stoner Avenue, because it's freaking awesome. There's unrestricted, no decal parking. All right. The only times we have is Thursday morning and Friday morning for street cleaning when they show up now after COVID.
Yeah, really.
But I went to this little thing where I want Dennis to sit on the wall and I want to recline the seat in the car and just leave it there. So I'm the only one on the right-hand side. And when the meter man or woman comes up behind in the little electric car, I want to get a signal and just start the car and drive away really fast.
Dude, please do that. Please, please, please do that.
Well, why don't you come over and we'll do it one day. I'll make lunch.
Oh, dude, I love it.
It'll be a riot. I love it.
Yeah, we won't eat pizza. We won't give them any smells to give them any kind of heads up. You know, let's just let their butts drive up there.
I miss being up on the stage with you. Thank you so much for coming out to where was it? I was
Flappers. You were at Flappers.
Flappers. Thank you. It's a little early for me, folks. 11 a.m. is a little early for me to get out of
there. And you had carbs yesterday.
Oh my God. I was telling Anna that Dennis and I have been doing this keto/no-carb diet, and it's working. It's great once you get stuck into it, and you get in the routine. Well, I started a new job at the Maison Hotel in Mosaic Hotel, on South Beverly in Beverly Hills, and I really enjoyed a lot. But I had to do some back-to-back shifts, and I was just exhausted. And I was on the way home, and I said, screw it. And I pulled into the drive-thru of Jack in the Box. And I was on the phone with Anna when I was doing it. And I said, I just ordered about $30 worth of fried garbage. And I brought it home and we ate it and enjoyed it. And then today, if I can just feel all that stuff just surging back into my veins and my brain. Oh, yay. But it was great. It was great going down yesterday.
Yeah.
No, so, Anna, you're retired now from Disney.
Yes. From D-I-S-N-E-Y. L-A-N-D. Don't I see Negroes enjoying yard work like all Negroes do? See, a lot of people just know the short version. I can tell you what the real name is.
What? How many? You were there for what? 30 plus years?
30 years.
And what did you do?
I was an executive secretary. Well, by the time I left, they had, because like every time they bump you up or they add more letters into the name of whatever it is that you do, your salary goes down. When I was an executive secretary, man, I loved Christmas and Jewish holidays because I would clean up. I would get massages and coupons for all kinds of free stuff. And by the time I left, I was, I think it was called a Sec 5 or a Sec 3 or something. So, and it wasn't even, they don't even spell it out. They don't even say secretary. They go Sec and then whatever that Roman numeral is. And then, that's what you are. And, when I was an executive secretary, my bosses would give me cash for the holidays. I paid my my car tag, my car registration every year based on the money that I got from my boss.
Well, that's pretty swell.
It was great. it was great because I wasn't, you know, I couldn't afford teeth. So I figured I might as well go ahead and pay for my car, you know, pay for my car tags. And then at least I can drive around and drive through the drive-thrus and stuff.
Well, how long have you been retired? How many years now?
5 years.
It's five. Yeah, because you were just getting ready to retire when we first met, I think, right? You were still working with Disney.
I was actually still working there. Yeah.
Yeah, when we were doing shows at the Laugh Factory together.
Yeah.
Yep. You miss that?
No, not really. I don't. You know what? I never really wanted to do stand up.
Really?
I, as a performer, I'm doing more storytelling now. I'm actually working on a show for October as a storyteller. But I just wanted to write. I like writing stuff. I'm very good at picking up on people's vibes and what they're trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would rather write a joke for you than to get up on stage and be, you know, talking.
I'm surprised. I didn't realize that because your stage presence is friggin' hilarious.
I always give my best. But if I had my druthers, if I had a preference, I'd rather just, you know, be in a writing room somewhere or be working with a comedian and trying to craft a show that really shows them off.
Like a Buddy and Sally and Rob, per se?
Yeah.
From the Dick Van Dyke Show, for those
of you. Yeah, no, I know who you're talking about. They may not know who you're
talking
about.
That's what I meant.
Because you and I are both.
Those. Of course we know.
Yeah, well, you know, you and I are both old as fuck. So, As a matter of fact, on that note, before I forget, because, you know, I smoke a little. I found this thing called the comedy. It's the 1991 Comedy Industry Guide.
Have you ever heard of this? Have you ever seen this before? No, I never have. I was asking where did you find it?
Oh, well, dude, because it came out in 1991, and like that's how comedians used to find work. And it's wonderful.
Oh, it's like before the internet. That's where you're going to find your club.
This is where you will find work. It was an annual publication listing contact information for agents, actual comedians and talent, club bookers, college bookers, cruise bookers, and this 1991 edition. Let me tell you some of the people who were in this. In this thing, Brad Garrett. And so what they would do is they would list the comedian's name, where they were based, and then if they had any agents or TV or whatever. Brad Garrett listed his home base as Marina Del Rey, and it just had his agents. George Lopez is in it. Mission Hills agents. Steve Bluestein, Joe Behar. Terry Garr is in under comedians when she lived in North Hollywood. George Burns is in there.
No,
George
kidding.
Carlin is in there.
So it just goes back for this particular guide goes back years and years into their.
No, this is just for 1991.
Well, because George Burns, he was dead in 1991.
No, he wasn't.
He wasn't?
No.
Oh, well, I learned something new today.
Yeah. No, Byron Allen is in this book, and he's got his agent's name and his TV appearance as a show host.
I can't wait to get. I'd love to see that.
Yeah, yeah. Jim Carrey is in here. Cheech Marin is in here with his LA base and his agent, and Tommy Chong is in here with just his TV appearance on the Arsenio Hall show.
Oh my gosh!
And Johnny Carson is in here.
And probably half the people that are tuning in, which I hope they are, don't even know who most of these people are, and they're brilliant.
Red Fox is in there with one TV appearance on the Byron Allen Show.
No kidding.
Yep. And my comedy dad, Stanley Myron Handelman, is in there with just his phone number. And then last but not least, I'm in here.
Girl, are you kidding? That's
no,
awesome.
No, I'm not bullshitting. And that was before I adopted my, my stage persona as a colored lady. But yeah, and it's got a phone number that I don't even remember having.
No kidding. I cannot wait to dig into this.
It's dude, you know, I have, you know, I'm a book person. That's why, like, you know, I've been on this carousel a long time. I've been on this, you know, whatever, you know, for the longest time. And so I can see the wall from here. And so I'm giving away shit. I'm giving away books and like stuff, you know, because when you die, man, people don't give a damn about.
You know what? They absolutely do not. You think that there's stuff that you're going to hand down to your nieces and nephews or what, and they don't give a damn. When you're gone and your stuff is just crap.
Well, not only that, but you lose control over who gets your stuff.
Right.
So well, I have been like, I gave my young nieces, they're 12 and 14 now. And I gave them a bunch because I, you know, I'm all about Black history. Dude, I have a copy of a paperback copy of Soul on Ice from high school.
Soul on Ice, tell me about it. I'm sorry, I'm not familiar.
Oh, no. Okay, you know what? I'm just, okay, hold on a second. Where is it? It's from the Black Eldridge Cleaver. I couldn't think of his name.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was a book that Eldridge Cleaver wrote when he got out of jail.
Please, but forgive
Eldridge
me.
Eldridge Cleaver was a leader of the Black Panther Party.
I see.
Okay.
Oh, now I knew that. I'm sorry, I'm not awake.
No. You know what?
Like, for some reason, I was thinking it was awake. About African American ice skaters.
Oh, no, Soul on Ice was Eldridge Cleaver's manifesto. And, you know, it was like him and Bobby Seale.
Of course,
you know.
Well, these are important things for you to pass down to your family.
Well, you know what, dude, I have some stuff for my son. I have autographed copies of different books for him. The rest of these, I think I found a home for a lot of them. But, dude, I have five books. Cases here, and all of them, or the majority of them, have books in front of books. So yeah, it's a thing.
Dennis and I, there was in our neighborhood in West LA, you know, they're doing the gentrification just like they are in friggin' North, you know, Burbank, North Hollywood. They're great communities where they can take down one house and cram in a bunch of townhomes, you know,
up. Right.
And I have got something from just about every house in the neighborhood that they've gotten ready to tear down. And there have been several of them when it's just sad that whoever owned the home probably checked themselves into the hospital for something and never came out. All right. And that's given us the opportunity, or me the opportunity, you know, and I don't break the door down, but if it's already broken down and the fence is around it, I'm going to go in and see what's there. So I did get the joy of cooking from, the guy that lived on the corner down here, he was one of Los Angeles's top analysts, because I Googled him from this stuff in his desk and all. But we went to this house on the corner of LaGrange and Missouri over here. And the guy, I don't know how to describe how many books and books and books and shelves of books. And when I opened the front door, the floor was covered in books. And it was the strangest thing. Like, whoever went in first, they didn't really vandalize it in the respect. Like, the books were still on all the shelves, but for some reason, they just took a bunch and threw them all over the floor. And you had to walk. There were so many that you couldn't bend down respectfully, pick them up, close the binding, and move them on it.
Right.
But I was just in awe of this guy, what of a reader he must have been, you know? Yeah. And there were tons and tons of books, although I did get some, we took a few books and some, for whatever possessed, there were photo albums. And it was an Asian family, because this neighborhood, where Little Tokyo is, it was predominantly Asian for generations. And I, you know, for some reason, I have got them. And I said the china that was in the cabinets took some of that, because it was all stuff that was just going to get bulldozed.
Oh,
and I said a little prayer to the guy that was living in the house, his parents had passed away, then he moved into the house. And this is all stuff that you could research through record.
Right.
And I said a little prayer, said, I hope you don't think that, you know, I'm pillaging your home, which basically was what we were doing. But it was better, you know, to share it than have it being torn, you know, just covered over by a bulldozer.
Yeah. No, dude, you're not pillaging if the guy's already said, I don't care about any of this.
You know, but there were just so many books. And I need to be reading more myself.
I mean, I love books. I've always, because growing up in Birmingham, like we weren't even, we didn't have a library. When we moved
to Chicago. Tell us about growing up in Birmingham. You were growing up in what, the 50s and 60s there?
60s. Or? Yeah, the 60s.
Uh-huh.
The early 60s. And I mean, like, you know, for instance, I don't know if you've ever heard of the Chitlin Circuit.
Mm-mm.
Have you ever heard of the Chitlin Circuit?
No.
The Chitlin Circuit was the circuit where entertainers, black entertainers, were allowed to perform in the South. They had certain venues, like in Birmingham, it was the Carver Theater. There was also a theater called the Tivoli Theater, which were colored only. And so when the entertainers would come to town, they were allowed to perform in certain venues, but no restaurant would serve them.
Right. So, wasn't there a travel guide for the African American community?
There's a green book, and I actually have a copy of a green book here. I didn't think about it, but yeah. And you can actually find reprints of the original Green Book by year. Yeah. And the Green Book was, because before there were, like now we have freeways everywhere.
Right.
Back in the day, there were not freeways everywhere.
No, it was like, the two-lane connecting highways like Route 66 or whatever. Little towns.
No lights, none of these wonderful lights on the freeway or on the highway where you can see stuff.
And I mean, a Wendy's at every exit or McDonald's at every exit.
There's none of that. And dude, we couldn't even go to Stuckey's. We couldn't stop at Stuckey's. They didn't want black money at Stuckey's. They were like, y'all just keep going, make some food of your own. We would drive there. I think it was something like, I don't know, like a 12 or 13 hour trip from Chicago to Birmingham or Birmingham to Chicago. But what the Green Book did was it told you where it was safe to get gas or where you could get, where you could get a hotel or find a room or food or whatever it was. That was the early bed and breakfast for black folks.
There's a lot of like movies now that not now, but in the, over the last few years that have opened our eyes to what the black community had to go through with like the Green Book. And like, we were just watching Driving Miss Daisy. Okay. And when he's taking her to Mobile or whatever, and he pulls over, they're eating on the side of the road, mm-hmm. and he's harassed by the law. Yeah. Even while she's in the car.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it was, and white people are scared. I hate to talk about y'all, but y'all are scared. And there were times when, like, it wasn't, if you were kind to a black person or a brown person, you could lose your business because they would call mm-hmm. you a nigger lover and say, well, we're not going to buy stuff from you.
Yeah.
And it was, I mean, like, that. The community was just that way. I told you I had one of my classmates was killed in the bombing, the 16th Street Church bombing. Changed my whole opinion about God. Changed my whole opinion about religion and what was, how people would change their attitude based on what they wanted as opposed to what was in the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it was
Have you ever watched the show Any Day Now? It's not in production anymore, but if you haven't, you must. It was a Lifetime show that came on about 10 years ago.
Okay.
And I think it lasted 4 seasons.
Wow, that's a lot.
And it's Lorraine Toussaint, who was the most brilliant African-American actress of all
time.
I've met her a couple of times. And before COVID, she was going to be a guest on the show. And I knew her through connections in Beverly Hills and that sort of thing. And she's not my best friend, but she is, if you don't know who Lorraine Toussaint is, Google her, but it's Lorraine Toussaint and Annie Potts. And
yes,
it's a show that's so well done.
Yes, yes, yes. I remember.
Yeah. And it goes back and forth into black and white because they were best friends as children when Lorraine Toussaint, Renee's father, who James was a huge lawyer and activist for the Black community in Birmingham.
Yeah.
And it's a great story that goes back and forth from their childhood to adult. But it's just it's a wonderful story about the love and friendship and respect of a Black woman and a white woman.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. If you could, you know, if you could, if there was any way possible to ignore, you know, the general, because you got to remember, I mean, like Blacks and whites didn't even live close together. I mean, the houses were. As a matter of fact, when I got to Chicago, and like on the Chicago, like the South, I lived on the South Side, and there were people, that Black folks, that kind of lived all over town in these little enclaves of Negroes, and you know, and but white people would say, and I started working at the Federal Reserve Bank, and so a lot of the people from the West Side worked downtown and worked down there. And there were not a lot of Southside people that worked down there, but white people would come up and go, "Oh, well, do you know Jim or do you know Mary?" I was like, "No, I've never met them." And the shock on their face is like, "Really?
The assumption
you don't know them?
Where
do you live?"
That would have been referred to as the Negro community then, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, because white folks are always, you know, they love to name shit.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was I may have told the story, but my father, you know, there was not a racist bone in my parents' bodies. There was not. And my father bought his first house in Levittown, Pennsylvania, now historic Levittown, Pennsylvania, when he was a young businessman just starting his career. And mother told me this after, because, you know, that my father bought the house sight unseen in a tract house, you know, post World War II community. That was pretty high living back then, you know?
It was.
But absolutely. He had no idea that it was segregated. And he was livid that it was a segregated community. He never would have even considered buying a house there. And there's a really interesting thing that you might be interested in Googling Levittown, Pennsylvania, because it was also the an incident of worldwide of attention. Mm-hmm. When the first African-American family moved in like 1959.
Oh, yeah.
And it was just, it's really interesting to see the interviews, you know, the black and white interviews with the women and the beehives and the cat eye glasses, some, you know, and men, and some who are absolutely pro, like, you know, live and let live, let these folks in, you know, we're all people. And then, you know, the ignorance, because it's not just in the South too. I mean,
no,
you know,
it would do
the. Yeah. But that's what's weird is good. You know, when we moved to Nashville, Tennessee in 1974, okay, my father moved his business there. Mm-hmm. And I have to tell you that I know it was around, but there were a couple of, and the school that I went to was out in the, it was in the country, like what Thousand Oaks would be to Los Angeles.
Okay.
And there was a couple of kids that your family either had a little bit of money or you were redneck as hell with the gun rack and the rebel flag. And there were a couple of kids that had that there must have been more than I was exposed to that had that lousy racist attitude and made it. But I was blessed, I guess, the friends that I made and that sort of thing. We never had any kind of not like, oh, we were better or anything, but I just don't remember any influence. And then when I think back on it, it was only just a few years after segregation was still alive in places like Nashville, sure, with water fountains and lodging and schools, you know?
Yeah. But you have to
absolutely should be taught more, you know.
Well, it doesn't even need to be taught more, dude. Go to any high school and see who's sitting with who. You know, the only integrated groups that you see are the nerds and the theater people.
Well, that must have been why I was voted senior class favorite in 1979, because I was friends with everybody.
There you go.
Maybe
it's invisible to you. That's just like when I started at you know, when I was enjoying the yard work over at that corporate office there, I was, and I know that I was the test Negro, because there's always a test Negro. Back then there was always the, you know, there was always the canary in the coal mine, mm-hmm, test Negro. And my job, I didn't realize it at the time, but my job was to, because I was the only Black person in the building in the first building that we moved into. My job was to walk around.
When did you start with Disney? What year? Or
this was 88.
Okay. But go ahead.
My job was kind of to walk around and take, deliver stuff. Like my boss would do a memo and, you know, he put it in the thing. He goes, you need to walk this up to the third floor. And so I'd walk up to the, you know, so I'd take the elevator up to the third floor and I'd, you know, walk it around and stuff. And what I didn't realize was my job was to make people more comfortable or get them accustomed to seeing Black folks walk around without a pail and a mop.
Well, were there not that many Black folks in any of the, obviously not then, in any of the like upper divisions at all? I mean, because no. I absolutely see what you're doing as far as, you know, being used as a subtle integration tool into departments and that sort of thing. Canary in a coal mine, as you just said.
Okay. When I moved down here, I moved down here because I had been a ground up construction inspector for, and this was up in the desert. You know, this is like up in the Victorville, Apple Valley, Hesperia area, because there was an Air Force base right outside of Victorville.
Right, right.
And so, you know, we were stationed there. I was a military wife. And so, by the time, you know, in the mid 70s, they started building houses up there because a lot of the GIs that were coming back were buying homes, and homes up there were really cheap. Because it was so remote, like if you really had to do big shopping, you went to San Bernardino, which was 40 miles away, or Barstow, so you could eat at.
Dang, those places are still tiny.
Not really. I mean, like, you know, like.
Well, as far as comparatively to LA, but go ahead. But if you had to drive that far, but, you know, wow.
Anyway, now see, now you made me lose my train of thought, and shame on you.
We're talking
about, you know, I'm old. We're
talking about being the token at Disney.
Oh yeah. Okay. So anyway, by the time I started, and the thing is, like, the boss, the guy that hired me, my first job there was I was a secretary to a new vice president that was coming in because they had this new retail division that was starting up. And, you know, that was going to be really big business because at the time the company didn't have a presence in malls. And so actually that company invented specialty retailing. You know, years wow. later, Warner Brothers started and all of these different film studios started having places in the mall. But we were there long before Warner Brothers or Sony or any of those other places. And so the guy that hired me was really smart, and it was a real kind of boutique kind of event because, you know, we were only going to do a certain number of malls and a certain number of areas and stuff. And then after everything took off, you know, then they really went with a bigger expansion and went into Canada and London. I actually did the punch list for the London store. And that was before Disneyland Paris. That was, you know, that was one of those big things. But the guy that hired me, we were talking one day and you know, he was just kind of a maverick kind of a guy. His dad had come through the system and he had come through the system and he knew stuff. He knew how to talk to people. He knew how to produce different things, and he really knew how to motivate people. Mm-hmm. And one time, he said to me, "Because I did something, and I did something wrong, or I did something, and somebody called me on it. I was like, okay, that's I'm really sorry." And you know, he says, "Look, this is not brain surgery. Nobody died because you did this particular mistake," and he says, "I can tell you, it's better to ask forgiveness than permission." I had never heard that in my life. And I looked at him, I said, "Dude, that kind of thinking could get me killed in the places where I've lived."
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was no, like, you know, you ask permission for everything. And just based on that conversation, which was early in my in my career at that company, you know, I realized that, yeah, there actually is no line.
You know
if
what?
You have a great idea and you need to do something, then you go ahead and do that.
This is why I had mentioned before, for no other reason than it's fascinating. And I've mentioned Tommy Gatto, our comedian friend, his lovely mm-hmm. daughter, Michelle Gatto Whitley, is in a position and now she's white, but she's in a position with Disney. I think you guys would have so much to talk about, especially with what she does internationally and what you did mm-hmm. and the time change and all. And let's, because only because of this show, the Bob Dean Show, yay, always flies by so quickly. In our last 10 minutes, I want to talk to you about what you're doing with the kids. So my point being is that let's do another show with us, and maybe we can get Michelle on too.
Or, that'd be great.
Yeah, it'd be great because we're just scratching the tip of the iceberg on so many interesting and eloquent topics.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. So
yeah, let me tell you about young storytellers. Young storytellers.
Yes, young storytellers. Tell us about it.
Young Storytellers is a 501c3 charitable organization that helps young people, usually in the fifth to sixth grade level, learn to write a 5-page script for a screenplay. They learn about storytelling. They learn about not just storytelling, but how to put together a script story. And they learn the difference between, you know, like when you're reading a story out of a book, as opposed to where you have to put in every little detail, every little movement. You know, is it interior, exterior? What are the characters like? What do they want? All of those, you know, like just all of those kinds of things.
And there's limited students in the class, right? You were telling us.
We're doing 10 children. Mm-hmm. And we used to have enough volunteers so that every volunteer, every mentor had one kid that you worked with. And since COVID, we're now doing 2 or sometimes 3 kids where you have 2 mentors and 3 kids. But it's like a little writer's room. And so the kids learn to cooperate with each other. And I've done this for the last, 20 years. Cause I was when I was enjoying the yard work, I was part of a pilot program from that company.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and it's 9, you know, like I said, it's a 9-week program. And it's always the same now. Like the first 3 weeks, these kids, like they have that just blank expression on their face because, you know, they're used to their computers and their phones and all of their other jazz, you know, all this other stuff. So once they understand what's expected of them, including deadlines, like they don't understand, you know, like when we say 5 weeks or 6 weeks, we mean to be here at 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And they're, you know, they're kind of vague and stuff. And then the third week, dude, every time
it clicks
the light
in.
Comes on, the light comes on and their face changes.
I was just going to say, it must be pretty awesome to see that happen.
It is, dude, it's intoxicating. Because like now I know what to look for. I've been doing it long enough that I know that, you know, this will probably be the week where everybody will understand what's really going on. Their faces change. They get more... most of the time they become a little more verbal,
mm-hmm.
and they understand that there are no limits as to what they can do.
Now these little kids, they're artists at heart, as you know, as we are.
Mm-hmm.
How do they get into the program? Is it just they by request or
no? The teachers
see a light in them.
I guess it is because when they've already been pre-vetted by the time that we see them.
I got you. That's
and so the, you know, the principal and all of the teachers select the students that they find the most promising and they feel that will benefit the most from the program. And so they, you know, they send those kids to us. Okay. I have to share this one story because this is my most recent little boy.
Please do.
First of all, he's amazing. He's just really, you know, he's got a lot of little tics and things. And if I ask him a question, I'd say, well, you know, We'll call him Sam. Sam, what do you think about this particular thing? He go, And then he would, you know, and then he would come up with something that was like hilarious. But, you know, for whatever reason, I don't know whether he doesn't get a lot of attention at home and stuff, but he was just so funny. So a few weeks ago, like the next to the last week that we were writing, and the story was almost finished. And so I'm typing because we have to take dictation from these kids and write all this stuff down and then come back and you know, put it in the script for them. And so he said something weird. I was like, what did you just say? And he said it again. I was like, dude, I don't understand what you're saying. He goes, I was just messing with you. 10 years old. He's 10 freaking years old and he's messing with me. I'm older than his grandparents. I love that boy. I hope that people recognize the genius that this kid can be if he's allowed.
See, to. And he's getting a step up with a person like you. And it's a shame that, in my opinion, that more kids can't be accepted into programs and classes like this, just like the band or theater. But this is something that's really intricate and special as far as teaching them how to write. And not, you know, we don't even have time to go on about this, but the writer's strike and this program that writes all that garbage for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know,
yeah, and
these young minds to do it the way, you know,
yeah. But these, you know, these kids are—they're so very just beautiful and amazing, dude. I've been living off of that joke. The program ended 2 weeks ago. I've been living off of that joke for the last month because every time I get. If I get sad or I'm feeling, or, you know, I have a lot of, you know, I have an old lady, a lot of old lady maladies and stuff. I think about the conversation and it lifts me up. It makes me it just lifts my heart and lifts my spirit that this child is, I mean, like he's just at the precipice of being able to express himself, and people may be put off by his little tics and stuff. And it's not that. Sometimes you have to look at a person, and we do it. We do the same thing with, we do the same thing with ugly people. I have a whole different thing about, like, you know, like how beautiful people are allowed. There's what they call pretty privilege.
Mm-hmm.
And there's, you know, beautiful people are allowed to just go and do and be whatever they want. Everybody wants a pretty boyfriend or a pretty girlfriend, and you know, they want a wonderful package because we love our packages. And so, you know, that's what people want. And sometimes, you know, that allows people like Ted Bundy. Did you ever see Ted Bundy? That dude was a fox.
Yes, he was. And I hate to do this, but we got to wrap this up.
Okay.
But listen, we're going to stop right there with Ted Bundy was a fox.
Well, I mean, he's no John Wayne Gacy scaring the shit out of people and changing,
right, we were talking about
and changing clowns for kids.
Ruined clowns and these Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence and everything of news. I mean, great. It's wonderful that they're charitable work and this and that, but they scare the shit out of me.
Dude, I adore it. those brothers and sisters are wonderful.
Because
I told you, I worked with Sister Empathy, and her makeup is all kabuki stuff.
Right.
It's deep, authentic stuff. It's great.
Anna, I just love you.
I love you too, baby. We'll have to do a show or do something together.
Well, yeah, and we'll do dinner in the next week or two.
Okay.
Anybody that wants to join us, let us know.
All right.
Yeah, well, let's come back and we'll pick up. There's a lot more that we need to dig into.
I know I didn't even get into the part about cannabis as a medicine and Dr. Sebi and you know how you can, you know, how you don't need to take a pill all the time.
It's fascinating. We're going to call this a Colored Lady Show because you are more stimulating.
Yes.
No, you're just a wonder to be around, and I just love you. And Dennis and I, we just love you for your friendship, and we're going to get you back on in next week, a couple weeks. I've got some other people lined up.
You know what? I would love any invitation is welcome and appreciated. So thank you, sweetheart.
Thank you very much.
And kiss Dennis for me. No tongue, but just kiss him.
Yeah.
I made Dennis laugh.
What, oh, he just said, God, what a gem. Listen, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for tuning in to LA Talk Radio and the Bob Dean Show.
Yeah.
And that's it for this week. Tune in next week, Thursday, 11. Mwah.
Good thoughts, everyone.
Bye.
You're listening to The Bob Dean Show, only on LA Talk Radio.